Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to the big book of Psalms, and we're going to go to Psalm number 64 today. We're kind of looking through several of David's undated Psalms, which have content that I believe indicates they were written during this time when he was running away from King Saul and very upset that he'd been lied about by people that he used to consider companions, comrades in arms, friends. So Psalm number 64 has a heading. It says, "To the choirmaster, a psalm of David." That's all the information we need on that. Let's look at verse number 1. And I want you to feel the psalm as we go through it. Remember the context of David's life at this moment. He is very frustrated and often very angry about what's been done to him. "Hear my voice, O God, in my complaint. Preserve my life from dread of the enemy. Hide me from the secret plots of the wicked, from the throng of evildoers who whet their tongues like swords, who aim bitter words like arrows, shooting from ambush at the blameless, shooting at him suddenly and without fear." So he pictures this as being like a war, and he's being shot from an ambush by people that he used to trust. Verse 5, "They hold fast to their evil purpose. They talk of laying snares secretly, thinking, who can see them? They search out injustice, saying, we've accomplished a diligent search. For the inward mind and the heart of a man are deep." So he sees these guys as making it their career to do David in. They've gone to great extremes. But David believes that God has and will respond on his behalf. Verse 7, "But God shoots his arrows at them. They are wounded suddenly. They are brought to ruin with their own tongues turned against them. All who see them will wag their heads." That's that shaking the head like, wow, this is not a good situation that those people got themselves into. Verse 9, "Then all mankind fears. They tell what God has brought about and ponder what he has done." So David in this psalm pictures that once justice has been done against these people, when they are shown to be liars, when they are shown to be carrying out inappropriate actions and being punished for it by God, that people will think twice about engaging in such behavior themselves, and they will give God glory. Verse 10, "Let the righteous one rejoice in he who is and take refuge in him. Let all the upright in heart exult," or raise God up. And so David is saying that about himself and his companions, that they need to rejoice when they see that God is keeping things on the up and up. Well, let's go to Psalm number 70 next. Psalm number 70. Same thing, same sort of context and content. It says, "To the choirmaster of David for the memorial offering." So perhaps intended for some sort of sacrificial ceremony. But listen to the words and feel them. "Make haste, O God, to deliver me. O he who is, make haste to help me. Let them be put to shame and confusion who seek my life. Let them all be turned back and brought to dishonor who desire my hurt. Let them turn back because of their shame who say, aha, aha." So he wants public vindication. He wants God to screw up the plans and intentions of these guys that are trying to get him killed, and be pushed back away from him and shamed over their actions. Verse 4, may all who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. May those who love your salvation say evermore, God is great. Now, there's Jesus' name kind of encoded there again. The word salvation takes place in the context of the God whose name is He who is. So, Yehoshua, Joshua, Jesus, He who is salvation. So, may all of us who love Jesus be able to say forevermore, God is great. Verse number 5, but I am poor and needy. Hasten to me, O God. You are my help and my deliverer. O He who is, do not delay. So David sees himself as being without any type of personal ability to resist all of this stuff. He needs God to step in. And you can appreciate that because he's out there in the wilderness. He's only got about 600 fighters with him. And Saul's got tens of thousands, perhaps several hundred of thousands of personnel that he could call up to defend him and many of them to track David down. Let's go to Psalm 86 next. Psalm number 86. And the heading is just simply a prayer of David. Incline your ear, O my master, and answer me, for I am poor and needy. Similar phrasing to what we just finished with. Preserve my life, for I am godly. Save your servant who trusts in you. You are my God. Be gracious to me, O my master, for to you do I cry all the day. So David is asking God to intervene on his behalf because David is trusting God to do exactly that. Gladden the soul of your servant. For to you, O my master, do I lift up my soul. For you, O my master, are good and forgiving, abounding in steadfast love to all who call upon you. Give ear, O he who is, to my prayer. Listen to my plea for grace. In the days of my trouble, I call upon you, for you answer me. So David knows from past experience that calling upon God brings results. Now, I feel the need at this point to remind you that when there's special formatting in our English Bibles, you know, capital letter L and then capital letter ORD in slightly smaller point, that's a marker for the divine name. When you have capital letter L and then lowercase ORD, that's typically, in the Old Testament, an indicator of the word Adonai, which means my Lord or my Master. And so as I go through here, I try to distinguish between those two as we go through. Verse number 8. There is none like you among the gods, O my Master, nor are there any works like yours. All the nations you have made shall come and worship before you, O my master, and shall glorify your name. So all the surrounding nations on the borders with Israel, they've got their own idols. They've got their own pantheon of gods. And David sings out to God, none of those guys count for anything. You're the only one that does good works, great works, because you're the only true God. And that's what's going to bring some of these non-Jews to you when they realize that their gods are nothing. Verse 10, for you are great and do wondrous things. You alone are God. Teach me your way, O he who is, that I may walk in your truth. Unite my heart to fear your name. So remember, the divine name is He who is, and it represents that there is no God but Him. So David is saying, please teach me that in a day-by-day lesson of walking with you. Verse 12, I give thanks to you, O my Master, my God, with my whole heart, and I will glorify your name forever. For great is your steadfast love toward me. You've delivered my soul from the depths of Sheol. Sheol is the unseen place in Hebrew. It's the place where the spirits of dead people go previous to Jesus' death and resurrection. And it was divided up between the place of the unrighteous dead and the place of the righteous dead. So David is basically just saying here, you've delivered me from death. You've kept them from killing me. That is Saul and all of his supporters. Verse 14, O God, insolent men have risen up against me. A band of ruthless men seek my life, and they do not set you before them. So David knows that these guys are out there to get him. They're trying to track him down, and they're not doing it for God. They might think they are, but they're not, because they are not paying attention to God's directions. Verse 15, but you, O my Master, are a God, merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. David's now quoting back to God, something that God said and Moses recorded back in the book of Exodus when the divine name was first given. Verse 16, turn to me. Be gracious to me. Give your strength to your servant and save the son of your maidservant. Show me a sign of your favor that those who hate me may see and be put to shame, because you, O he who is, have helped me and comforted me. So he wants God to give a sign of his concern and protection for David. And God does provide that from time to time in the stories that we've been looking at. Well, now we need to jump way ahead in the Psalms for the next ones that fit into this category that I've been establishing. Psalm 140. To the choir master, a psalm of David, but the theme remains the same. Deliver me, O he who is, from evil men. Preserve me from violent men who plan evil things in their heart and stir up wars continually. They make their tongue sharp as a serpent's, and under their lips is the venom of asps. Selah. And so we saw that same sort of imagery in a previous song. So David repeats many of these concepts in his poetry, in his singing. Selah, I've told you repeatedly, I believe is a musical notation. Probably means make it big here. That is, bring the music up or expand on the musical interlude. Verse 4, guard me, O he who is, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from violent men who have planned to trip up my feet. The arrogant have hidden a trap for me, and with cords they've spread a net beside the way they've set snares for me. One of the ancient ways of catching birds in particular, but other small animals, was to have a little net on the ground and camouflage it and then spring it as the animal or the bird came into range. And so David is picturing these guys hunting him like a wild animal, like a wild bird. And he wants God to know that and do something about it. Verse 6, I say to he who is, you are my God. Give ear to the voice of my pleas for mercy, O he who is. O he who is my Lord, the strength of my salvation. You've covered my head in the day of battle. Grant not, O he who is, the desires of the wicked. Do not further their evil plot, or they will be exalted. Selah. So don't let them get away with it. Don't let them think they've got away with it. As for the head of those who surround me, let the mischief of their lips overwhelm them. So boomerang it. Make it flip back on them. Let burning coals fall upon them. Let them be cast into fire, into miry pits, no more to rise. So this is another example of imprecatory psalms, that is, cursing psalms. Do bad things to them, God. Do something. Eventually, David gets around to acknowledging that's up to God. Let not the slanderer be established in the land. Let evil hunt down the violent man speedily. I know that he who is will maintain the cause of the afflicted and will execute justice for the needy. Surely the righteous shall give thanks to your name. The upright shall dwell in your presence. So he finishes the psalm on a positive note that if you're righteous, you know God's looking out for you. And you will be able to thank him for how he intervenes in your behalf. Now, we might have to wait until Judgment Day for that, but we know God is able to give justice at just the right time. Well, Psalm 141 is also on my list, so let's read it. It is a psalm of David. Oh, my master, I call upon you. Hasten to me. Give ear to my voice when I call to you. Let my prayers be counted as incense before you, and the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. Now, David, because he's on the run, has not been able to go to the tabernacle and be there for the worship services that happen twice a day, when incense is offered and when the sacrifice is given. So he says, God, let this be a substitute for me being at that worship service. Verse 3, set a guard, O he who is, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Do not let my heart incline to any evil, to busy myself with wicked deeds, in company with men who work iniquity, and let me not eat of their delicacies. So he asks God, do not lead me in the path of iniquity. Don't let me go down the unrighteous road. Let a righteous man strike me. It's a kindness. Let him rebuke me. It's oil for my head. Let my head not refuse it. So he's now saying, you know, if I get off track, may righteous people bring me back on track. Even if they have to give me a spanking, I am thankful that they would care enough to bring me back. Last part of verse 5. Yet my prayer is continually against their evil deeds, that is, the unrighteous people. When their judges are thrown over the cliff, then they shall hear my words, for they are pleasant. As when one plows and breaks up the earth, so shall our bones be scattered at the mouth of Sheol. So apparently David's got in mind here, some of these guys are going to be executed. They'll be thrown off a cliff and stoned to death because they've not been judging appropriately. And that's when death comes on the scene. The bones being scattered at the mouth of Sheol, the place of death. But my eyes are toward you, O he who is my master. So this is Yahweh Adonai. So that's why you've got God in all capital letters here, because that's the divine name in this context. So he says, my eyes are toward you. Instead of being one of these unrighteous people, I'm keeping my eyes on you, God. In you I seek refuge. Leave me not defenseless. Keep me from the trap they've laid for me and from the snares of evildoers, and let the wicked fall onto their own nets while I pass by safely. So he asks God for divine protection. These guys that are tracking me down, that are trying to catch me and trying to kill me, don't let them succeed. In fact, let it ricochet on them. Let it bounce back on them. Let them be caught in their own traps, hoisted on their own petard. which is a reference to a bomber being killed by his own bomb. So that's the idea David is asking for. Let what they want to happen to me happen to them instead. Well, we've got time to do the final psalm that's on my list, and that's Psalm 143. Psalm 143, a psalm of David. Hear my prayers, O my master. Give ear to my pleas for mercy. He's said that many times now in these psalms. In your faithfulness, answer me. In your righteousness, enter not into judgment with your servant, for no one living is righteous before you. So there is where he's asking for mercy. God, when you judge me kindly, because no one is perfect before you. Verse 3, for the enemy has pursued my soul. He's crushed my life to the ground. He's made me sit in darkness like those long dead. And therefore my spirit faints within me. My heart within me is appalled. So David is, he's being worn on by these weeks and months of being pursued and having to hide out and worry about the latest lie that's being offered about him. And he wants God to know that. Of course, God does know that, but David needs to vent. He needs to express it, and we all understand that need. Verse 5, I remember the days of old. I meditate on all that you've done. I ponder the work of your hands. I stretch out my hands to you. My soul thirsts for you like a parched land. Selah. So bring the music up here. So David remembers when he had the better days, when he had the ability to go to worship at the tabernacle and to just meditate upon what he knew God wanted him to think about. And now that he's out here in the middle of nowhere, he's stretching his hands out to God and thirsting for him even more because he's missing all of that. Verse 7, answer me quickly, O he who is. My spirit fails. Hide not your face from me, lest I be like those who go down to the pit. That's another euphemism for death. Let me hear in the morning of your steadfast love, for in you I trust. Make me know the way I should go, for to you I lift up my soul. So he wants to start every day being reminded that God loves him. And isn't that where we should start each of our days? Knowing that God loves us, that he loves everyone around us and wants them all to be saved, just like he wants us to be saved. And that's why he sent Jesus. And that should control the way we live our day and the way we interact with people. Verse 9, deliver me from my enemies, O he who is. I have fled to you for refuge. Teach me to do your will, for you are my God. Let your good spirit lead me on level ground. And I immediately think about Paul writing about walking by the Spirit, being led by the Spirit. That's what David is praying for here. Verse 11, for your name's sake, O he who is, preserve my life. In your righteousness, bring my soul out of trouble. And in your steadfast love, you will cut off my enemies, and you will destroy all the adversaries of my soul, for I am your servant. So David has confidence that God is going to bring him through all of this. It's been a tough time out in the middle of the Judean wilderness, having very few people along with him and being worried about whether or not Saul's spies are going to find him or some local is going to betray them to Saul's forces. And David's worried about his followers and their families. So all of these psalms are the way that David just kind of vents and lets God know that he wants to trust him in everything. Well, that finishes up our foray through the Psalms of, I think, were written during this period. We'll come back to more Psalms later. The book of the Psalms is kind of a hard one to tackle. Do you tackle it all at once, or do you, as we're trying to do, kind of break it up and put the Psalms in the different places where their content seems to be indicated? I want you to turn to 1 Samuel 25 as we set the stage for tomorrow's return to the historical narrative. 1 Samuel chapter 25 simply says this: "Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah." Now that happens during this last couple of years where Saul is trying to track down David. So that means that Samuel must have been very close to 80 years of age when he passed away, because he was right around 60 when he anointed Saul to be the king over Israel. And so Saul has been king for over 18, perhaps by now, 19 years. Saul and Samuel have not had any genuine interaction for about 18 years, or let's call it 17 years. And now Samuel is gone, and Saul is completely and totally alone. And it's really going to get bad now between David and Saul. And the fact that Samuel is dead is going to be important to the story that comes up with Saul's death. So kind of file this away at this point, that Samuel died about a year or so before Saul ceased being king.